This is Audible.
Feet of Clay by Terry Pratchett, read by Tony Robinson. It was a warm spring night when a fist knocked at the door so hard that the hinges bent. A man opened it and peered into the street. There was a mist coming off the river. He might as well have tried to see through white velvet. But he thought afterwards that there had been shapes out there, a lot of shapes, watching him carefully. There was no mistaking the shape right in front of him, though. It was big and dark red, and looked like a child's clay model of a man. Its eyes were two embers.
"Well, what do you want?"
The golem handed him a slate, on which was written, "We hear you want a golem."
"What, yes, afford, no. It's wicked the prices you're going for these days."
The golem rubbed the words off the slate and wrote, "To you, $100.
"You're for sale?"
"No." The golem lurched aside. Another one stepped into the light. It gleamed like a newly polished statue. It reminded the man of the old pictures of the city's kings, all haughty stance and imperious haircut. It even had a small coronet moulded onto its head.
$100? What's wrong with it?"
"Nothing is wrong. Gollum must work. Gollum must have a master." $80.
"But no one's making golems any more," said the man. "That's what's keeping the price up."
$60.
"Who's doing it?"
$50. The man walked around the golem.
"The priests banned making 'em years ago."
$40.
Was that $30 I just saw you write?"
"Yes."
"One moment."
The man went inside and returned with a handful of coins.
"Will you be selling any to them other bastards? It's hard enough competing as it is."
"No."
"Good. It's a pleasure doing business. Inside, Sonny Jim."
The white golem walked into the factory. The man shut the door. Shadows moved in the dark. Rocking slightly, the big heavy shapes moved away. Shortly afterwards, around the corner, a beggar holding out a hopeful hand was amazed to find himself suddenly richer by a whole $30. Autumn fog pressed itself against the midnight window panes. Blood ran in a trickle across the pages of a rare volume of religious essays which had been torn in half. There had been no need for that, thought Father Tubalcheck. There had been no need to hit him either. But people healed, books didn't. Father Tubalcheck reached out shakily and tried to gather up the pages. The room was spinning. The door swung open. Heavy footsteps creaked across the floor. Step, drag, step, drag. Father Tubalcheck tried to focus.
"You?"
Nod.
"Pick up the books."
The old priest watched as the books were retrieved and piled carefully. The newcomer took a quill pen from the debris, carefully wrote something on a scrap of paper, rolled it up, and placed it delicately between Father Tubalcheck's lips. The dying priest tried to smile.
"We don't work like that. We make our own..."
The kneeling figure watched him for a while, and then, taking great care, leant forward and closed his eyes. Commander Sir Samuel Vimes, Ankh-Morpork City Guard, frowned at himself in the mirror and began to shave. The razor was a sword of freedom. Shaving was an act of rebellion. He knew that Lady Sybil mildly disapproved. Her father had never shaved himself in his life. He had a man for it. But Vimes hated the idea of the world being divided into the shaved and the shavers, or those who wore the shiny boots and those who cleaned the mud off them. He'd started out in the gutter. Yet now he was on 3 meat meals a day, good boots, a warm bed at night, and, come to that, a wife too. Good old Sybil. Ah, well. Sam Vimes dried himself off and went downstairs. Willikins the butler was waiting with his coat.
"Remember, you have an appointment with his lordship at 11, Sir Samuel."
"Yes, yes."
"And you are to see the heralds at 10. Her ladyship was very explicit, sir. Her exact words were, 'Tell him he's not to try to wriggle out of it again, sir.'"
"Oh, very well."
"Your sedan chair is outside, sir."
"Thank you." Outside, the two bearers straightened up expectantly. Sir Samuel Vimes, commander of the City Watch, rebelled again. He looked at the front man and motioned with a thumb. "Get in."
"But, sir..."
"It's a nice morning." Vimes took off his coat again. "I'll drive myself." In the Dwarf Bread Museum in Whirligig Alley, Mr. Hopkinson, the curator, was somewhat excited. He'd just been murdered. But at the moment, this was an annoying background detail. He'd been beaten to death with a loaf of bread, dwarf bread, which has amazing properties as a weapon of offence.
"Look at this dent here," said Hopkinson. "It's quite ruined the crust."
"And your skull, too."
"Yes, but what was wrong with a simple hammer? I could have provided one if asked."
Death, who was by nature an obsessive personality himself, realised he was in the presence of a master. The late Mr. Hopkinson had stored paperclips by size.
"It really is too bad. I shall complain."
"Mr. Hopkinson, are you fully aware that you are dead?"
"Dead? Oh, no. It's not convenient. I haven't even catalogued the combat muffins."
"Nevertheless..."
"No, it won't do. You'll have to wait."
His hand went through a tabletop.
"Oh."
"You see?"
"Couldn't you have arranged a less awkward time?"
"Only by consultation with your murderer."
"It all seems very badly organised. I wish to make a complaint. I pay my taxes after all."
"I am death, not taxes. I turn up only once."
The shade of Mr. Hopkinson began to fade. The sedan chair came to a halt outside Pseudopolis Yard. Vimes left the runners to park it and strode in, putting his coat back on. Sergeant Colon was waiting for him with a clipboard.
"Been a bit of an odd murder, sir. In one of them old houses on Misbegot Bridge. Some old priest."
"Who found him?"
"Constable Visit, sir."
"Oh, gods. I'll get along there this morning. Anything else?"
"Corporal Nobbs is sick, sir."
"I know that."
"Off sick, sir."
"Not his granny's funeral this time?"
"No, sir."
"How many's he had this year?"
7, sir."
"Odd family."
"Yes, sir."
"Fred, you don't have to keep calling me, sir."
"Got company, sir."
The sergeant glanced meaningfully towards a bench in the main office. "Come for that alchemy job." A dwarf smiled nervously at Vimes.
"I'll see him in my office."
Upstairs, Vimes ushered the dwarf in, shut the door, and sat at his desk.
"So, you're an alchemist. Acid stains on your hands and no eyebrows."
"That's right, sir."
"Not usual to find a dwarf in that line of work. Guild member?"
"Not any more, sir."
"Oh. How did you leave the guild?"
"Through the roof, sir. But I know what I did wrong."
Vimes leant back.
"What's your name, lad?"
The dwarf swallowed.
"Little Bottom, sir."
Vimes didn't even look up.
"Ah, yes. It says here you're from the Oberwald mountain area. Our Constable Angua comes from there. Now, can't read Fred's handwriting. Your first name is..."
There was nothing for it.
"Cheery, sir."
"Cheery. Cheery, Little Bottom."
Not the faintest glimmer of amusement crossed Vimes' face. He drummed his fingers on the desk.
"Listen, I know how to be a copper, but there's lots of things I don't know. You find the scene of a crime and there's some grey powder on the floor. What is it? I don't know. But you fellas know how to mix things up in bowls and find out. I need someone
who knows what colour a liver is supposed to be, someone who can look at the ashtray and tell me what kind of cigars I smoke.
Pantweed Slim Panatellas.
Good gods.
You left the packet on the table, sir.
Right. Vime stood up. I can't say I like dwarfs much, Littlebottom, but I don't like trolls or humans either, so that's okay. And you're the only applicant. You're on a month's trial, $30 a month, and I expect you to work to the job, not the clock. Now, find an iconograph and meet me on Misbegot Bridge in... Damn, an hour. I've got to see about this blasted coat of arms. Sergeant Detritus! There was a series of creaks as something heavy moved along the corridor outside, and a troll opened the door.
Yes, sir.
This is Corporal Littlebottom. Swear him in, show him where everything is. He looked at Detritus. Incidentally, I've got a report here that a troll in uniform nailed one of Christo Praise's henchmen to a wall by his ears last night. Know anything about that? The troll wrinkled its enormous forehead.
Does it say anything about him selling bags of slab to troll kids?
No. The watchman's eyes never left each other's faces. Then Detritus shook his head slowly.
Must have been a imposter, sir. None of my trolls would do anything like that. That would be police brutality, sir.
Glad to hear it. Well, off you go, Littlebottom. Detritus will look after you. Vimes listened to them go down the passage. Then he carefully shut the door and put his coat over his head so that no one would hear him laughing.
Cheery little bottom.
Detritus looked down at Little Bottom and grinned.
Welcome to life in the big city, Little Bottom.
What slab? Said Cheery.
It are chloric ammonium and radium mixed up. It give your head a tingle, but melts trolls' brains. Some buggers are making it in the city.
Detritus pushed open a door.
This is their old privy, what we don't use no more. You can use it for mixing up stuff, but you have to clean it up first, 'cause it smells like a toilet.
He opened another door.
And this is the locker room. I'll give you your helmet in a minute, but first I got to go and hide this hammer.
The Ankh-Morpork Royal College of Heralds turned out to be a green gate in a wall in Mollymog Street. Vimes tugged on the bell pull. Immediately on the other side of the wall, there was a cacophony of hoots, growls, whistles and trumpetings. A voice shouted,
"Down, boy! Couchant! I said couchant! No, not rampant! Mildred, let go of Graham!"
The animal noises subsided a bit. A wicket gate in the main door opened a fraction. Vime saw an inch-wide segment of a very short man.
Yes?
Commander Vimes, I have an appointment.
Oh, thee'd better come in.
The door swung open. Vimes stepped through. Silence fell. Several dozen pairs of eyes regarded Vimes with acute suspicion. The yard was full of animals, and most of them were clearly very old, which didn't do anything for the smell. There were hedgehogs, a greying leopard, and molting pelicans. Green water surged in a scummy pond, and a couple of hippos surfaced and yawned. Nothing was in a cage. A toothless lion yawned. It was being used as a cushion by an elderly griffin, which was asleep with all four claws in the air.
"We're quite a happy little family," said the old man, who had a wooden leg.
Vimes found himself looking at a small owl. My God, that's a moorpork, isn't it? The old man's face broke into a happy smile.
Ah, I can see thee knows thy heraldry. We could do with a mate for her, tell you the truth. And a female hippo. His lordship says we've got two hippos, which is right enough. I'm just saying it's not natural for Roderick and Keith. I ain't passing judgment. It's just not right. That's all I'm saying. Mind where the wyvern's been, sir. He's been ill. Oh, what a shame. Never mind. It'll scrape off beautiful when it dries.
The old man led the way through the steaming mounds of multi-species dung to the building on the other side of the yard.
In he goes, sir.
The hall inside was quiet and dark. There was the dry tombstone smell of old books and church towers. Above him, when his eyes got used to the darkness, Vimes could make out hanging flags and banners, cobwebs and dead flies. The old man limped back to continue what he had been doing before. What he had been doing was setting up a living coat of arms. There was a large shield. Cabbages, actual cabbages, had been nailed to it. The two hippos flopped out of their pool and took up station on either side. The old man unfolded an easel, placed a canvas on it, picked up a palette and brush, and shouted,
"Hopla!"
The hippos reared arthritically. "Good gods," murmured Vimes. "I always thought they just made it up."
"Made it up, sir! Made it up!"
said a voice behind him.
"We'd soon be in trouble if we made things up. Oh, dear me, yes!"
Vimes turned. Another little old man had appeared behind him, blinking happily through thick glasses. He had several scrolls under one arm. He held out his spare hand.
"Croissant rouge pursuivant!"
"You're a small red breakfast roll?"
"No, no! It means Red Crescent. It's my title. I'm a herald. You'd be Sir Samuel Vimes, yes?"
"Yes."
"Good. How do you feel about weasels?"
"Weasels?"
"I know they're not strictly a heraldic animal, but we've got some on the strength. And frankly, I'm going to have to let them go unless we can persuade someone to adopt them. And that'd upset Pardessus Chatain Pursuivant."
"Pardessus? Oh, you mean the old man out there?"
"Not weasels, then?"
"Personally, I'd just as soon not bother. And certainly not with a weasel. My wife said dragons would..."
"Happily, the occasion will not arise," said a dust-dry voice in the shadows. It might have come from a tomb. "Perhaps Sir Samuel would be kind enough to step this way? Pray enter."
Vimes passed into the shadows of the inner sanctum.
"I have been Dragon King of Arms for more than 500 years, but I do not breathe fire, I assure you, Commander.
The light came from several dozen candles that burnt with black-edged flames. Vimes couldn't see the figure clearly, but there was a suggestion of hunched shoulders in the shape.
"You're a bloody vampire." "Vampire, yes. Bloody, no. Virgins are safe from me. For several 100 years, more's the pity."
Either Dragon King of Arms had very hunched shoulders, or there were wings under his shapeless robe. Some of them could fly like a bat, Vimes recalled.
"I'm afraid your time has been needlessly wasted, Commander."
"I don't understand."
"I believe you're here because it is considered appropriate that you have a coat of arms. I am afraid that is not possible. A Vimes coat of arms has existed, but it cannot be resurrected. It would be against the rules."
"What rules?"
"I'm sure you know your ancestry, Commander."
"It's something to do with Old Stoneface, isn't it?"
"Indeed. Your ancestor. Old Stoneface, commander of the City Watch in 1688. He murdered the last king of Ankh-Morpork."
"Executed." The shoulders shrugged.
"Nevertheless, the family crest was, as we say in heraldry, excretus est ex altitudine. Destroyed. Banned. Lands confiscated, page torn out of history. I believe, Commander, that you too have acquired the nickname."
"Are you telling me I can't have a coat of arms?"
"This is so.
Because my ancestor killed a..."
"He was the king."
"Someone had to do it. Some monsters shouldn't walk under the living sky."
Dragon sighed. "There is seldom a reward for those who do what must be done. Alas, I am powerless. But still, I was pleased to hear of your marriage to Lady Sibyl, an excellent lineage, one of the most noble families in the city. The Ramkins, the Selakais, the Venturis, the Nobbses. But this, they tell me, is the century of the fruit bat. Now, it seems, as soon as a man opens his second meat pie shop, he feels impelled to consider himself a gentleman. He waved a thin white hand at some coats of arms pinned in a row on a board. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, well, the candle maker, in fact. Vimes glanced at the shields. Haven't I seen that one before? Ah, Mr. Arthur Carey, candlemaker. Suddenly business is booming. He feels he must be a gentleman. A shield bisected by a bend sinister d'une méchant metal grise, that is, a steel-grey shield bisected by a wick. Upper half, a chandelle in a fenêtre avec rideau houlant, lower half, two chandeliers illuminés. Fortunately, his father was a harbour-master, which allowed us to stretch ourselves a little with a crest of a lamp au poisson, a fish-shaped lamp, indicating both this and his son's current profession. The motto I left in the common modern tongue. Art brought forth the candle. It was naughty, but I couldn't resist it. My sides ache, said Vimes. Something kicked his brain, trying to get his attention. This one, is for Potts the baker. Dragon pointed with a twig-thin finger. Can you read the motto, Commander? Quod subigo farinam. Vimes wrinkled his forehead. Because I need the dough? Well done, sir. Dragon clapped his hands. These, of course, we have to make up, whereas the escutcheon of an old family such as the Nobbses... Nobbs? Said Vimes as the penny dropped. That's it. You said Nobbs before. Oh, yes. A fine old family, although now sadly in decay. You don't mean Nobbs as in Corporal Nobbs? A book thumped open. Would that be C.W. St. J. Nobbs?
Yeah.
Son of Scone Nobbs, grandson of Slope Nobbs.
That sounds about right.
Who was the illegitimate son of Edward St. John de Nobbs, Earl of Unk and a parlourmaid of unknown lineage? Good gods. The Earl died without other issue. We have not been able to trace the scion hitherto. Good God! You know the gentleman?
Yes.
Is he a man of property?
Only other people's.
Well, Do tell him. There is no land or money now, but the title is still extant. Let me make sure I understand this. Corporal Nobbs, my... Corporal Nobbs is the Earl of Unk? It would appear so.
And I suppose he gets a coat of arms?
A particularly fine one.
Huh.
Well, well, this has been a very happy meeting. I do like to keep the records up to date. Incidentally, how is young Captain Carrot getting along? I'm told his young lady is... A werewolf. Dragon tapped the side of the nose. We know these things.
Captain Carrot is doing well, said Vimes icily. Captain Carrot always does well.
He slammed the door when he went. The candle flames wavered.
I found something very interesting that you will be very interested to see, said Captain Carrot.
That's interesting, said Constable Angua.
Automatically they fell into step, the energy-saving walk of policemen.
But I'm not going to tell you what it is, because I want it to be a surprise.
Oh, good. As surprising as the collection of rock samples you showed me last week?
That was good, wasn't it? All those silicates.
Amazing.
Angua told herself it wasn't his fault he'd been brought up by dwarves in some mine, and really did think bits of rock were interesting. The week before, they'd visited an iron foundry. That had been interesting, too. And yet you couldn't help liking Carrot. Even people he was arresting liked Carrot. She liked Carrot. A lot. Which was going to make leaving him all the harder. Carrot didn't mind that she was a werewolf, but he minded that other people minded. He minded that even quite friendly colleagues tended to carry a bit of silver somewhere on their person. She could see it upsetting him. She could see the tensions building up, and he didn't know how to deal with them. It was just as her father had said. Get involved with humans other than at mealtimes, and you might as well jump down a silver mine. Oh, here we are. Angua looked up at the sign.
Dwarf Bread Museum. Gosh, I can't wait.
Carrot nodded happily and pushed open the door.
Cooey, Mr. Hopkinson!
There was no reply.
Hopkinson? That's not a dwarf name, is it?
Oh, he's a human, but an amazing authority. He wrote the definitive work on offensive baking.
It didn't look as though Mr. Hopkinson got many visitors. There was dust on the floor, on the display cases, and a lot on the exhibits. Most of them were the classic cowpat shape, but there were also buns, close combat crumpets, and deadly throwing toast.
What are we looking for?
Angua sniffed. There was a nastily familiar tang in the air.
The battle bread of Barion Bloodax.
You brought me here to see a loaf of bread.
She sniffed again. Yes. Blood. Fresh blood.
This battle bread, said Angua. Black, is it? A lot bigger than normal?
That's right.
And Mr. Hopkinson? Short man, little white pointy beard?
That's him.
And his head all smashed in?
What?
I think you'd better come and look.
Books filled the room. That was the first impression. Dank, oppressive bookishness. The late Father Tubalcheck was certainly dead. No one could have bled that much and still be alive, or survived so long with a head like a deflated football. Someone must have hit him with a lump hammer.
"This old lady came running out screaming," said Constable Visit, saluting. "So I went in, and it was just like this, sir."
"Just like this, Constable Visit?"
"Yes, sir."
"Who was the old lady?"
"Mrs. Kanakai, sir. She brings him his meals."
"Did she touch him?"
"She says not, sir."
Which meant the old priest had somehow achieved the neatest death Vimes had ever seen. His hands were crossed on his chest, his eyes had been closed. And something had been put in his mouth. It looked like a rolled-up piece of paper. It gave the corpse a jaunty look, as though he'd decided to have a last cigarette after dying. Vimes gingerly picked out the little scroll and unrolled it. It was covered with meticulously written but unfamiliar symbols. Their author had apparently made use of the only liquid lying around in huge quantities. "Yuck," said Vimes. "Written in blood. Does this mean anything to anyone?"
"Yes, sir."
"Yes, Constable Visit?"
"The name's Visit the Infidel with explanatory pamphlets, sir."
"Yes. Well?"
"It's an ancient Galatian script, one of the desert tribes called the Cenotines, sir."
"Do you know what it means?"
"I could find out, sir."
"Good.
Incidentally, were you able to look at those leaflets I gave you the other day, sir?"
"Been busy." Vimes turned. "Detritus, have a look round, will you?" Detritus was laboriously drawing a chalk outline around the body.
"Yes, sir." "What for, sir?"
"Anything."
"Right, sir."
Vimes prodded at a grey smear on the floor. "Dirt."
"You get that on floors, sir."
"Except this is off-white. We're on black loam."
"Ah, a clue."
There was something else. Someone had made an attempt to tidy up the fallen books. They'd stacked several dozen of them in one neat towering pile. "Now that, I don't understand," said Vimes. There was another smear of dirt on the windowsill. Vimes scratched some up and sniffed at it. "White clay," he said. He couldn't think of any white clay around the city. Outside the walls, it was thick black loam all the way to the ramtops. It was a mystery. And Vimes didn't like mysteries. Mysteries had a way of getting bigger if you didn't solve them quickly. He looked down at the late Father Tubalcheck with his pipe cleaner arms and toast rack chest. He certainly wouldn't have put up much of a fight. Vimes leant down and gently raised one of the corpse's eyelids. A milky blue eye with a black centre looked back at him. A religious old man who obviously didn't go out much from the smell. What kind of threat could he... Constable Visit poked his head around the door.
"There's a dwarf down here, with no eyebrows and a frizzled beard, says you told him to come, sir."
"Ah, Littlebottom. Send him up." Littlebottom climbed the stairs, took in the scene, and managed to reach the window in time to be sick. "Better now?" said Vimes.
I hope so."
"I'll leave you to it, then."
What exactly did you want me to do?"
But Vimes was already halfway down the stairs. Angua prowled the aisles of the Dwarf Bread Museum, muzzle to the ground. Then she went out into the alley for a while. After 5 minutes, she padded back to Carrot and growled. She didn't like to be seen en route from human to werewolf shape, or vice versa. When Carrot reopened his eyes, she was pulling her shirt on over her head.
"I can smell him, you, and the bread, and that's it."
"Nothing else?"
"Dirt, dust, the usual stuff, grease, meat, pine resin for some reason, old food. But I'll swear no living thing's been in here in the last day or so but him and us."
"But you told me everyone leaves a trail."
"They do."
Carrot looked down at the late curator. He definitely couldn't have committed suicide, not with a loaf of bread.
"Vampires? They can fly."
"Carrot, I can tell if a vampire has been in here in the last month."
Angua stepped into the room behind the little museum. It was full of junk and items of doubtful provenance, such as coins dated 52 BC. There were some benches with shards of dwarf bread on them, a tidy tool rack, and, against one wall, an oven.
"He researches old recipes," said Carrot.
Angua opened the oven door. Warmth spilled out into the room.
"Hell of a bake oven," she said. "What are these?"
"Ah, he's been making drop scones. Quite deadly at short range."
She shut the door.
"Let's get back to the yard and..."
Angua stopped. For a few minutes, just after a shape change, until the morphic field fully reasserted itself, all her senses were still keen. Smells were still incredibly strong.
"There is something else," she said. "Faint. Not a living thing. Something like dirt, but not quite. It's a muddy smell, but not exactly mud."
"You know, sometimes I envy you," said Carrot. "It must be nice to be a wolf just for a while."
"It has its drawbacks."
"Like fleas," she thought, as they locked up the museum, and the constant nagging feeling that you should be wearing 3 bras at once. The first clocks were striking 11 as Vimes' sedan chair wobbled to a halt outside the Patrician's palace. Commander Vimes ran up 5 flights of stairs and collapsed on a chair in the waiting salon. You didn't knock on the Patrician's door. He summoned you. Minutes went past. Something inside Vimes' coat went,
"Bing, bing, bingly, bing."
He pulled out a leather-bound package about the size of a small book and opened it. A friendly yet slightly worried face peered up at him.
11 a.m. Appointment with the Patrician."
"It's 5 past.
And
you didn't remind me about the College of Arms at 10. The imp looked panic-stricken.
"That's Tuesday, isn't it?"
"It was an hour ago."
"Oh!"
Vimes sighed inwardly. He had a notebook, it was useful. But Sybil, God bless her, had bought him this 15-function imp. As far as he could see, at least 10 of its functions consisted of apologising for its inefficiency in the other 5. "You could take a memo," Vimes said.
"Wow, right. No problem."
"See Corporal Nobbs, also Re-Earldom."
Is this the memo?"
Yes.
Sorry, you should say memo first. It's in the manual. Say it again.
Memo, see Corporal Nobbs re-earldom.
Got it.
Vimes shut the lid of the organiser and carried on waiting. The clock said 11:15. Vimes walked over to the door and, despite precedent, knocked gently. There was no sound from within. He tried the handle. The door was unlocked. He went in. Cheery dutifully scraped up the crumbly white dirt and then examined the corpse of the late Father Tubalcheck. The man had been killed by being repeatedly hit around the head, some kind of very heavy blunt instrument. What else? There were a few specks of blood on the man's fingers, but then there was blood everywhere. A couple of fingernails were torn. Tubalcheck had put up a fight. Cheery looked more closely. There was something under the nails. It had a waxy sheen like thick grease. Conscientiously, he took an envelope out of his pocket, scraped the stuff into it, sealed it, and numbered it. Then something caught his eye. Father Tubalcheck lay there, one eye still open as Vimes had left it, winking at eternity. Cheery looked closer. He wasn't sure. The mind could play tricks, but... He took his iconograph out of its box, opened the little door, and spoke to the imp inside.
"Can you paint a picture of his eye, Sydney?"
The imp squinted out through the lens.
"Just the eye?"
"Yes, as big as you can."
From inside the box there came the swish-swish of brush strokes. At last there was the sound of a handle being turned, and a slightly damp picture rustled out of a slot. Cheery peered at it. Then he knocked on the box. The hatch opened again.
"Yes!"
"Bigger. Just paint the pupil. So big it fills the whole paper."
"You're weird."
Cheery waited anxiously. The paper wound out again. The hatch opened.
"That's it. I've run out of black."
And the paper was black, except for the tiny little area that wasn't. There was a movement behind him. Cheery turned to see Detritus in the doorway.
"Why are you taking pictures of the dead man?"
"Well, it might be helpful to see how he was lying."
Detritus nodded sagely.
"Ah, he was lying, was he? And him a holy man, too."
A constable arrived at the bottom of the stairs.
"Cheery little bottom."
There was a muffled snigger.
"Yes?"
"Constable Vimes says you've got to come to the Patrician's Palace right now."
Rumour is information distilled so finely that it can filter through anything. It can run from ear to ear without ever touching lips. It had escaped already. From the high window of the Patrician's bedroom, Sam Vimes could see people drifting towards the palace. On the bed, Lord Vetinari opened his eyes.
"Ah! Commander Vimes, I appear to be lying down."
"You were in your office, sir, unconscious."
"Dear me, I must have been overdoing it."
Lord Vetinari tried to pull himself upright, swayed and fell back again. His face was pale, sweat beaded his forehead. There was a knock at the door.
"It's me, sir, Fred Colon. What's up? Someone downstairs said Lord Vetinari's dead."
"Dead,"
murmured the patrician from his bed.
"Nonsense."
Vimes dragged Colon out of the room. "I reckon he's been poisoned, Fred."
"Ye gods! Do you want me to get a doctor?"
Vimes bit his lip. All the doctors in the city were employed by the guilds, and all the guilds hated Vetinari, so... "Fetch Donut Jimmy."
"Donut?"
"Just get him, Fred."
"What if he won't come?"
"Then say that Commander Vimes knows why Laughing Boy didn't win the Quirm $100 last week. Off you go. We don't have much time." Vimes shut the door and turned the key in the lock. There was a crowd in the audience chamber when Vimes went downstairs. They were milling about, worried and unsure.
"What's going on, Vimes?"
Mr. Bogis of the Guild of Thieves demanded. "I believe Lord Vetinari has been poisoned." In the silence, a pin would have clanged.
Fatally?
Not yet. There was a turning of heads towards Dr. Downey, head of the Guild of Assassins.
I am not aware of any arrangement with regard to Lord Vetinari, he said. Besides, we have set the price for the patrician at $1,000,000.
And who has that sort of money? Said Vimes.
Well, you for one, Sir Samuel.
There was some nervous laughter.
We wish to see Lord Vetinari, in any case, said Bogis.
No.
And why not, pray?
Doctor's orders.
Which doctor?
Dr. James Folsom. It took a few seconds.
Donut Jimmy? He's a horse doctor.
So I understand.
But why?
Because many of his patients survive. Vimes went back up the stairs, trying to ignore the shouts behind him. Cheery Little Bottom wiped his brow.
It could be arsenic. Look at his colour.
Has he been eating his bedding?
Said Donut Jimmy.
All the sheets seem to be here.
How's he pissing?
The usual way, I assume.
Donut sucked at his teeth. They were the colour of the inside of an unwashed teapot.
Walk him round a bit on the loose rein.
The patrician opened his eyes.
You are a doctor, aren't you?
Donut Jimmy gave him an uncertain look. He was not used to patients who could talk.
Well, I have a lot of patients.
Indeed, I have very little.
The patrician tried to lift himself off the bed and slumped back.
I'll mix up a draught, hold his nose and pour it down his throat twice a day, right? And no oats.
He hurried out, leaving Cheery alone with the patrician.
Tell me, young man, said Vetinari, are you a policeman? You appear to be of the dwarf persuasion.
The voice faded to a murmur. Cheery didn't bother to answer. There was no use denying it. Somehow people could tell you were a dwarf just by looking at you. Then Detritus came in and looked carefully around the room. Finally, he picked up a battered chair.
This'll have to do. I can break the back off.
What?
Said Cheery.
Old Donut said for to get a stool sample.
Detritus went out again. What's my next move, Fred?
Dunno, sir.
Remember the last patrician?
Oh, yeah, Lord Snapcase, nasty piece of work. At least this one didn't wear a dress.
Vedinari's not dead yet, Fred.
But he's not exactly in charge, is he?
No one's in charge, I suppose.
You never know your luck, sir.
Vimes turned around. Colon was standing stiffly to attention, his eyes firmly fixed on the middle distance. What do you mean?
Not a thing, sir.
Fred, if there is a new ruler, it won't be me.
Then who, sir?
How should I know? The gap opened ahead of him, and he could feel his thoughts being sucked into it. You're talking about Captain Carrot, aren't you?
Could be, sir. Everyone likes Captain Carrot, and, well, rumours got about that he's the heir to the throne.
There's no proof of that.
Well, he's got that sword of his and the birthmark shaped like a crown, and, well, everyone knows he's king. It's his charisma.
Vimes distrusted charisma. No more kings, Fred.
Right, sir. By the way, Nobby's turned up.
The day gets worse and worse. All right, tell him to come up. Vimes was left to himself. Kings. The concept revolted his very bones. What mostly set Vimes' teeth on edge was the idea that kings were a different kind of human being, a higher life form. Whoever had created humanity had left in a major design flaw, its tendency to bend at the knees. There was a knock at the door. It shouldn't be possible for a knock to sound surreptitious, yet this knock achieved it.
Come in, Nobby.
Corporal Nobbs sidled in. He saluted awkwardly.
Fred said you wanted to see me, Mr. Vimes.
Yes, Nobby. There's something I've got to tell you.
Yes, sir.
Do you remember your father?
Old Schooner, sir, not much. Never saw him except when the military police used to come to drag him out of the attic.
He didn't leave you anything?
Couple of scars, sir.
Vimes nodded. Well, when you've got a moment, nip along to the College of Heralds in Mollymog Street, will you? Say I sent you.
It's
all right. You won't get into trouble.
You say so, sir.
When Nobby had gone, Vimes reached behind the patrician's desk and picked up a faded copy of Twerp's Peerage, or, as he thought of it, the Guide to the Criminal Classes. You wouldn't find slum dwellers in these pages, but you would find their landlords. And while it was regarded as pretty good evidence of criminality to be living in a slum, for some reason owning a whole street of them merely got you invited to the very best social occasions. He looked up the knobs. There even was a damn coat of arms, but nothing under Vimes. He went and looked out of the window again. Who had a motive for poisoning Lord Veterinary? The only people who'd risk killing him were madmen, or someone who was absolutely confident that if the city collapsed, he'd be standing on top of the pile. If Fred were right, that person was Captain Carrot. But Carrot was one of the few people who seemed to like Veterinary. Of course, there was one other person who stood to gain. It's me, isn't it? Thought Vimes. There was another knock at the door.
It's me, sir! Little Bottom!
How is his lordship?
Stable!
Dead is stable.
He's alive and sitting up, sir. Sir, you know Father Tubalcheck?
What about him?
Well, they say the last thing a dying man sees stays imprinted in his eyes, sir.
That's just an old story.
Yes.
Little Bottom handed Vimes a rectangle that was nearly all black.
But I thought I saw this little red spark, so I got the imp to paint a really big picture before it faded, right in the centre, sir.
Vimes stared at the picture. Glowing eyes.
Two red dots which might be a pair of glowing eyes, sir.
Good point, Little Bottom. Can you make copies?
Yes, sir. The imp's got a good memory.
Hop to it, then. But before Little Bottom could go, the door opened again. Carrot and Angua were there. I thought you were on your day off, Vimes said.
We found a murder, sir, at the Dwarf Bread Museum.
Another murder?
Someone killed Mr. Hopkinson. This is what it was done with.
Vimes turned the battle bread over gingerly. Dwarfs throw it like a discus, right?
Yes, sir. At the Seven Mountains Games, Snorri Shieldbiter took the tops off 6 hard-boiled eggs at 50 yards.
Did you hear about the priest being murdered on Misbegot Bridge?
Not old Father Tubalcheck. He was a nice old chap, very religious. Why should anyone want to kill him? Or Mr. Hopkinson? A pair of harmless old men.
Vimes handed him the battle bread. We shall find out. Constable Angua, I want you to look at this one. Take Corporal Littlebottom. He's been doing some work on it. Angua's from Uberval too, Littlebottom. Carrot nodded cheerfully. Angua's expression went wooden.
Oh, Hdruk Gahar the Watcher Tas,
said Carrot.
Ha ha, Anguat Constable. Angua Gaha, Bahak Bagagara Shirtas Kadak.
Which meant, welcome, Corporal Smallbottom, this is Constable Angua. Angua, show Smallbottom how well you're learning dwarfish. Angua concentrated. Carrot laughed.
You just said, small delightful mining tool of a feminine nature.
Well, dwarfish is difficult if you haven't eaten gravel all your life.
Thank you,
Cheery said.
I'd better go and tidy up.
What about Lord Veterinary?
Said Carrot. I'm putting my best man on that, said Vimes. In other words, I'm handling it.
Don't you want me to?
No. Take care of things at the watch house. Carrot saluted.
Yes, Commander Vimes.
Off you go, then. And if anything happens to Veterinary, Vimes added to himself as the dejected Carrot went out, no one will be able to say you were anywhere near him. The little grill in the gate of the Royal College of Arms snapped open.
Yes? What does thee want?
I'm Corporal Nobbs.
An eye applied itself to the grill.
Are you the baboon we've had on order?
No, I've been told to come.
Go round the back door.
Cheery was tidying away the equipment he'd set up in the privy, when a sound made him look around. Angua was leaning against the doorway.
I won't tell anyone, she said, if you don't want me to.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're lying.
Cheery sagged onto a seat.
How could you tell? Even other dwarfs can't tell.
Shall we say, I have special talents, but I don't know why you're so upset. I thought dwarfs hardly recognised the difference between male and female anyway.
Provided we only do what the men do.
Oh, yes, I know that tune.
But I can't hold an axe, I'm scared of fights, and when I try to quaff, I drown the dwarf behind me.
That could be tricky.
I mean, chainmail trousers are fine, but you can wear dresses with colours.
Oh, dear.
Angua tried not to smile.
I thought I could come here and get a different kind of job.
Angua stood up straight.
Well, you'll get on fine. Everyone's got troubles in the watch. Normal people don't become policemen.
You're normal?
Angua patted Cheery on the head.
Sometimes I can be a bitch.
What's that? What?
That painting with the eyes.
It's the last thing Father Tubalcheck saw, I think.
Angua stared at the black rectangle. Then she sniffed.
Where's that smell coming from?
Not me,
said Cheery hurriedly. Angua grabbed a small dish from the bench.
This is it. I smelt this at the museum. What is it?
Clay! It was on the floor where the old priest was killed. I think it's potter's clay. We used it at the guild. It looks like someone tried baking it but didn't get the heat right. See how it crumbles?
Angua glanced down at the dwarf's iconograph again.
Please no, she thought. Not one of them.
The front gate of the College of Arms swung open. Two heralds bobbed excitedly around Corporal Nobbs as he tottered out.
Has your lordship got everything?
If we can be of any help whatsoever.
Sorry about your boots, my lord, but the wyvern's been ill. It'll brush off when it dries.
Nobby tottered off along the lane. Igneous the Troll backed away until he was up against his potter's wheel.
I never done it.
Done what?
Said Angua. Igneous hesitated. He was huge and, well, rocky. He moved around the streets of Unc Morpork like a small iceberg and was known as a supplier of things. He was also a wall, which was the same as a fence, only harder.
Nothing,
he said finally.
Glad to hear it, said Angua.
Now,
she held out the sample,
have you seen anything like this before?
It clay. It don't have no serial number. Clay's clay.
He took the tiny piece, sniffed it, and rolled it between his fingers.
This is crank. Crappy clay. Good for lady potters with dangly earrings. Also, it got a lot of grog in it. Dad's bits of old pot smashed up real small. Makes it stronger.
He rolled it again.
This has been sort of heated up, but it ain't properly baked.
But you can't say where it came from.
Out of the ground. Come and look.
He loped away. The watchman followed him through the warehouse, observed by a couple of dozen cautious trolls. Igneous went out into the yard behind the factory. Pots were stacked high on pallets. Bricks were curing in long rows. Under a crude roof were several large mounds.
There! Clay!
Angua shook her head sadly. So much for clues. Clay was clay. And then Igneous helped the police with their inquiries.
"Do you's mind going out the back way?" he mumbled. "You's make the help nervous."
He indicated a pair of wide doors in the rear wall. The padlock on the gate was shiny and new.
"You are afraid of theft?" "Someone broke the old lock and pinched some stuff 3-4 months ago. It comes to something when half a ton of clay can just walk."
"Yes, indeed," said Angua distantly.
The gate rattled shut behind them.
"Fancy anyone stealing a load of clay," said Cheery. "Did he tell the watch?"
"I shouldn't think so. Wasps don't complain when they're stung. Anyway, Detritus thinks Igneous is mixed up with smuggling slab."
Angua peered up at the high spiked wall around the yard.
"Tell me, could you bake clay in a baker's oven?"
"Oh, no."
"Doesn't get hot enough?"
"It's the wrong shape. Some of your pots would be baked hard, while others would still be green. Why'd you ask?"
"Why did I ask?" Angua thought. "Oh, what the hell. Fancy a drink?"
The fog was rising fast, moving back in for the night, a clinging, yellowish, stinging blanket. In a drab alley off a drab street, Angua squared her shoulders and pushed open a door. The atmosphere in the long, low, dark room altered as she stepped inside. People turned in their seats. Cheery looked around nervously. She wasn't sure where they were, apart from somewhere in the cattle market district. Angua walked to the bar. A shadow appeared out of the gloom.
"Hello, Angua. Fruit juice?"
"Chilled."
"And what about the dwarf?"
"She'll have him raw,"
said a voice somewhere in the gloom. There was a ripple of laughter in the dark. Angua glanced at the dwarf. The remark seemed to have gone entirely over the small bullet head.
"I'll have a fruit juice too,"
Cheery quavered. Angua leant forward and showed the iconograph to the barman.
"You know everything that's going on, Igor? 2 old men got killed yesterday, and a load of clay got stolen from Igneous the Troll. Did you hear about that?"
The shadow considered this.
"Take a seat. I'll bring your drinks."
Angua led the way to a table in an alcove. A buzz of conversation resumed.
"What is this place?"
Cheery whispered. "It's a place where people can be themselves. People who have to be a little careful, you know?"
"No."
Angua sighed.
"Vampires, zombies, ghouls, the differently alive. Sometimes it's good to go where everybody knows your shape."
"Who's that girl? She looks normal."
"That's Violet. She's a tooth fairy. Next to her is Schleppel, the bogeyman."
In the far corner, something sat huddled in a huge overcoat under a broad-brimmed pointed hat.
"And him?"
"Old Man Trouble. You don't mind him."
Igor the barman appeared. He looked more or less human, apart from the hair on the back of his hands and the single eyebrow across his forehead. He tossed a couple of mats on the table and put their drinks down. Cheery looked around again.
Any werewolves?"
"One or two."
"I hate werewolves. I've got a silver mail vest."
"Oh?"
"One of them ate my second cousin."
Angua's memory spun in a hurry. Old meals came back to haunt her. A dwarf. No, she was pretty sure she'd never...
"That's why I can't stand them,"
said Cheery.
"Oh, people say they can be tamed. I say once a wolf, always a wolf. They're basically evil, aren't they? They could go back to the wild at any moment."
"Yes, you may be right."
"And the worst thing is, most of the time they walk around looking just like real people."
Angua lifted her beer mat carefully and glanced at the underside.
"Right. Drink up," she said. "We've got to go and see.
something.
Come on.
Excuse me, Commander Vimes.
Vimes looked up into a smiling face that sought only to do good in the world.
Ah, Constable Visit. I'm afraid I'm rather...